This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're going to spend the vast majority of the time today answering your questions, so there are many of them. We all know what's going on, so let's get started. I want to do this before we get to your questions, because I think Jason has a really good idea. A lot of people are saying that, oh, Atlanta United barely has a roster together now for CONCACAF Champions League. And that is an actual comment that is out there right now. Needless to say, the three of us don't necessarily agree with that notion. But just before we get to your questions, and hopefully this is going to provide a little bit of context for where we're at right now, heading into the first preseason friendlies this weekend, a couple weeks away from playing at Motagua. Jason, would you do us a favor? Would you please go to the whiteboard and kind of outline to us how Atlanta United, in a number of different formations, in a number of different lineup combinations, can still field an extremely competitive MLS side?
All right. Let's break these guys out for the first time in 2020. We're not going to talk about goalkeepers. We're not going to waste time. It's the same three from last year. You're good. Goalkeeper situation is the exact same. I tend to think that 4-3-3 will be the predominant shape this team plays out of. Could be completely wrong, but I think this team's kind of built that way. It was something that Frank said to us last year on day one. It was something we saw for a long stretch in the middle of the year last year. So let's go with that. Let's just do a very basic 4-3-3. Now, 4-2-3-1, for the purposes of what we're doing right now, it's the same thing. It's the same thing, and I'll show you why. People get hung up on that as being a major difference. It's not in terms of the personnel. It's more of the deployment of said personnel. So, if I can find the other red guy. There he is. All right. That's the 4-3-3. That's the 4-2-3-1. Massive difference, right? Not really. In a 4-3-3, one thing that comes out if you're playing traditionally in that shape, you can see these guys tuck in a little bit more than in a 4-2-3-1, where they're ideally going to be playing a wider role. You're going to have both here. It's going to be able to float back and forth. Let's look at it like this. All right, so on the left side, we have Bello. We have Castillo. Is this too low, Minna? You good?
I got it.
Okay, cool. Here, to start, Meza. Here, Robinson. Right side, Escobar. Okay. Midfield. This is where it gets a little tricky, and this is a spot that the team has said they want to look at potential players coming in from the outside. Let's go what we have right now. The more defensive person in this shape, let's start with Jeff Lorenowitz. Let's go here, Heineman. Let's go with the number 10, and I think based off what we saw late last season, Pitti was in that role quite often. Barco on the left. Joseph in the middle. Tito Villalba on the right now has a wide open spot to that position. Okay.
Now, hold that before you go any further. Manny, you have the whole lineup on the screen, right?
Yep.
Jimmy, that looks like a pretty good lineup, doesn't it?
Yes.
That looks like a lineup to me that could contend for an MLS Cup title, doesn't it?
Correct.
The difference is Meza replacing LGP, Heineman replacing Nagby, Villalba replacing Gressel in a 4-3-3.
Correct.
In this shape, that would be your differences. That's it. Bello was ideally going to be the left-sided player last year, got injured. He's back to that spot. He's going to be pushed by Castillo. I wrote them both because I think they'll split some time. All right, now let's look at depth in this shape. Okay, Let's start going through the roster. Let's make sure we don't miss anybody here. We know Adam John now. That's an easy one. He's going to fill in right here. All right.
Brooks Lennon.
Brooks Lennon can go, and I'm going to put people in multiple positions right now as depth. Lennon can go in these two spots to help you out.
Okay. Anton Walks.
Walks? Okay. This is going to be take a second. Walks can go here, and we'll just say that's for both. Actually, you know what?
Let's put it in the middle.
Let's put him in the middle as depth at center back. We're not going to get caught up in left-sided, right-sided center back right now. Walks can go here. We saw Walks play quite a bit here in 2017. Walks can go here as the more defensive one, which would be the Larenowitz replacement. Okay?
Eric Rometty.
Rometty can go here. He can go as the more defensive one. Okay.
Let's see. Luis Fernando.
Luis Fernando can go. I'm just going to write Luis. Okay.
Is George Campbell on the senior roster spot?
Yep. He would be right here. Okay.
I think that's it. Am I right?
Mo Adams.
Yeah, sorry, Mo.
Mo Adams would be mostly here, but he could be here. Okay.
Carlton's going to be loaned.
Lagos Kunga's going to be loaned. Is there anybody else we're missing?
I mean,
well,
now,
the starters, you could go in different spots. Larenowitz can go here, too. And that's something to keep in mind. Meza can go here, which is something to keep in mind. He can also go here. And he played all of those positions for Necaxa last season. All right. See if there's anybody else. If you want to get tricky with your midfield, Hyndman can go here. Barco can go here. Pitti can go here. Pitti can go here. Bialba can go here. Bialba could go to the left. Have I hit everything? I think so. Is anybody I'm missing?
To my knowledge, no. I mean, we could start getting into rumored players, like the guy from Hearts, supposedly is coming here on Thursday.
Okay, let's look at this right now. Mulroney from Hearts would be a player who could go here, 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 here.
Okay. Villasanti.
Villasanti could go here, here, maybe there, but probably not. Right. If you're doing that, you're going to be more defensive.
And then Arzamendia.
Here or here.
Right.
Those are your options.
Yeah. And those are rumors right now.
Yeah, I mean, those are
rumors. We have no idea on that. It sounds like Mulroney is a lot closer than just a general rumor right now. There are actual published reports that it's a low six-figure transfer and he's on his way over here, and Thursday there's going to be an announcement. That's a report.
Mulroney, to me, would be a almost like for like, except more versatile, Deion Pereira.
Okay.
That's where you're thinking here based off his level. He's played a decent bit at Hearts. He played in the Scottish second division, developed at QPR.
Just a tad older, right? Like he's 23?
23. A little faster.
And has a lot of youth national team experience for the Republic of Ireland. He's a nice player.
Yeah.
If that ends up going there.
Potential. There's definitely potential there, and he's got pace. Yeah. And that's something that this team has always valued.
Okay, so that's basically what we've got as of right now, today. Mm-hmm. And I, as I said on SDH today, I don't think this club is done. I don't think they're done making signings. I don't know why an assumption is out there that they are done making signings. They have, as we discussed on SDH today, TAM that they may have to spend.
TAM that they do have to spend. TAM always expires at some point.
So, we just don't know when it's expiring. So
one thing, because this is one shape.
Ah.
You do have other possibilities, and I don't have to rewrite everything. I'll explain it. We'll walk you through it. So, in a four-man back line, you're going to do this. If you play a 4-4-2, like we saw randomly a couple times in match changes, that's easy with this, especially if you want to bring in a third central midfielder, play somebody behind. You could be more of like a 4-2-2-2 kind of setup, like we've seen the North Carolina Courage do, like Philadelphia could play this year. Philly did a little bit of a 4-4-2 diamond, which was very narrow. You've got the personnel to do that. You can also play more of a traditional 4-4-2, which would be these two, these guys here instead, deeper. This player could go here or actually sit deeper. And if you remember, I can't remember which game it was. One game where they changed to that. I called it a 4-4-2 in the game. I think Frank said it was a 4-2-3-1 afterwards. Hindman called it a 4-4-2 the next media opportunity. Somebody else called it a 4-2-3-1. Well, it might have been.
I think it was the San Jose
match. It was one change because I think Pitti was the player who was in this role, and he's that kind of guy who can come up here and make it two, but also drop in deeper and spray passes. So it's a little bit more of where they're positioned. The bigger change would be three in the back. Now, that would mean you're going to something like that, and that's not a depth chart right there.
Right.
If that happened, I would assume that it's Larenowitz going here, or this actually opens up another possibility. Escobar comes into the mix in a three-man center back setup. Okay. So, that would mean you've got wing backs. That would mean you've got more of two up top, but think back to how we've seen this team play it, where it turns into more of a 3-4-3 at times. And that can go two different ways. We saw the 3-4-3 early. That was a little more like this. We also saw a 3-4-3 a little bit later that was more like this, with these guys pushing higher. You still got the personnel in those types of setups. Let's go 3-5-2 because that's what we saw more of last year. So, wing backs, all these guys are still accurate. Bello would be the most likely one in this scenario. I didn't put Lennon over here because we only did it one time last year, but it's also a possibility. On this side, you have to make the decision at wing back. Do you want Escobar central or do you want him as wing back? He's played both. He's done both very well. If it's not Escobar, it would more than likely be Lennon on this side as a wing back. Your midfield stays the same. Your second forward, it comes down to, do you want Pitti up higher or do you want Barco up higher? We saw both. I lean to Barco as a 10, but it seems like last season, as the year went on, it was the other way around. It was more of Pitti playing that number 10 role. Both are capable. It's more of the chemistry, more of the fit. And honestly, with either one, that's when it becomes a little bit more of this. Because Barco or Pitti, their natural inclination is to drop just a little bit deeper. Joseph becomes the front player. Now, what that does, and we talked about it all last year, that makes it harder for Vialba to get into the squad. Because the 3-5-2, when he's in there, it is much more rigid like that. It is much more two up top. Tito's not a central playmaking kind of player. So when he's there, it gives you that difference. Now, Adam John coming into the mix gives you an opportunity to have a different duo up here, a very different style duo. John can be big target. Joseph can play off of him, something we really haven't seen.
Yeah.
Now, we never saw really Kenwin Jones and Joseph in that role together, and Vasquez and Romario Williams were not that kind of player. So a 3-5-2 with Joseph and Tito means you're leaving out one of Pitti or Barco. A 3-5-2 without Tito, he's the one that's the odd man out, it's Pitti and Barco more like this. So you've got a lot of different possibilities. I think that's the biggest thing that I would stress here is that this depth is pretty good as it is. I don't think it's done yet. If Mulroney comes in, you add him in four spots. Villasanti you would add in two, maybe three. You're going to have a lot of ways to mix it up and find the right group.
Yeah. But we know you have a lot of questions, and thank you for that, Jason. I think that's a good explanation of where Atlanta United stands at this very moment. I still don't think they're done.
No, I don't think so.
We all agree with that.
I don't think they want to be done. Let's put it that way.
Right. And there's still a lot of time. I mean, you still have a little less than a month now to going down to Motagua, but it's certainly not unprecedented for this club or any club to make a late training camp addition or two. So this
or an April or May edition.
Absolutely, and that has happened before. And sometimes some of Atlanta United's most impactful editions have come in July.
Mm-hmm. Got that one.
And I think Eric Rometty would go right to the top of that list. So I just remember after 2017, there wasn't really as much angst about, well, what are we going to do without Carlos Carmona and Tyrone Mears and Anton Walks? No, there was a lot of turnover from 2017 to 18. There's a lot of turnover from 2018 to 2019. There's high-profile turnover from 2019 to 2020, and I understand that some very popular players have left. And you are absolutely right for feeling emotional about a high-profile, popular player leaving this club. I totally get that. But this club has not won trophies by accident. This front office has proven that they know what they're doing. They probably deserve a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. But I do understand that there are many, many questions.
Let's go through something real quick before we get there. So 2017, you lost Carmona and Walks, who were starting at the end of the year,
yes,
to go into 2018. 2018 going into 2019, you lost Garza, Almiron. Is that it?
Yes, I think so.
I think so. Parkhurst was more of an evolution to going to a backup role.
Right.
2019 into 20, Nagby, LGP, Gressel from the end of the year's regular starters.
Right.
It's usually been a couple. Now it's one more.
Yeah.
That's kind of where you're at.
And I don't think you're going to lose any more. And the Escobar rumors.
It's a rumor.
It's a rumor. He just got a green card.
That doesn't even factor into it to me. It's a rumor. And the rumor was also tied to a more likely scenario of Leonardo Jara, who was at D.C. last year on loan from Boca, being the player that Sebastian Becasese wants at Racing. Now, Jara is at Boca back after being loaned out for a year. There's nowhere for him to play. You have established starters at right back and left back. There's nowhere for him. It's going to be down to Boca doing a deal. Do they loan him again, or do they sell him to Racing? But that one is far more likely, because the amount that you would have to pay at this stage, after all the other turnover, to make it worth it to make that deal would be substantial for Racing.
Right.
They can get Jara cheaper, and he's expendable to Boca. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, so you're like Gressel and LGP, like the part of the original team
that adds that, to
you
it.
Know, adds
yeah.
as
totally
the years
get.
To it. And
yeah.
and Gressel was that
totally
surprising star
yeah,
that came
totally
from day one. And
yeah, it's a surprising
fan favorite too.
No doubt. Know. And you got $1.1 million for him. For a draft pick.
Especially with DC not having Yamil Assad and Gressel.
I get it.
Yeah, but
I get it. But
you could be what DC was last year if you don't do it the right way, which is this is doing it the right way. It might not be the fun way. It might not be the way that's the most comfortable for the fan base, but it's the right way, because otherwise you have a player like Luciano Acosta last year who you couldn't get signed to a new deal. You let him play out that final year of the deal. You kept you made the bona fide offer. You kept his rights. He's playing in Atlas and Liga MX. You got nothing. Yeah. And you had a bad year from him on top of it, because he's not thinking 100% about what's best for DC United at that point. He can't. And in Gressel's situation, I said it on the midday show, this is the biggest professional contract that Julian Gressel is likely to sign in his career. He'll be 30 at the end of it. Yeah. I don't think he'll make more at that stage. I don't think he'll get 4 years at that stage. He's had two very smart deals in that he had a lot of security. He signed a long-term deal coming out of college that got him 3 years and an option, which usually players picked eight and projected middle of the first round don't get. It's a shrewd deal. Now, the part where it doesn't become so shrewd is you get later into the deal and you're locked into a lower salary number. And that was the problem for him. It's right. Understandable. Now you sign a four-year deal. Now this is where, on DC's side, are they going to get full value in year four? I don't know. They might. They mm-hmm. might not. That's a long-term commitment. And honestly, when you look at DC's roster, I don't know how the pieces fit right now. Because you've got four players across the midfield who need to play. They can't all play, or you're going to have zero defensively. I don't know. We'll see if it makes DC better. I'm not 100% sure it does.
All right, let's see. I got a ton of questions.
Let's do it.
Ton of questions on Twitter, but first I'll start off with our Facebook folks. Christopher Gersel here. Thanks for tuning in. He says,
Christopher's in a glass case of emotion right now. I love Christopher, he has very, very strong opinions.
I like it.
And he's had very strong opinions over the last couple days, so we appreciate that.
I'll shorten this down a little bit, but
he says, don't have to.
Between LGP and Gressel having been sold, and reports saying that Velasanti and Arzamendi negotiations are stalling due to like salary disputes.
That's a new one.
Do you have a link?
Hold on. We'll come to that.
Due to salary disputes, it seems that this is the first season that the MLS salary cap has really bit Atlanta United, where a club that generates $80 million in revenue per year forced to follow a cap that's built for clubs that generate $15 to $20 million.
No doubt.
The last part, it's not built for clubs that generate $15 to $20 million. It's built to keep cost down, period. It's not built on a certain scale. The league's outgrown the scale that it's on. I think that's a definite here. And it's outgrown some of the crazy roster rules that are confusing everybody and how you manage that cap, because your salary cap is not actually $4 million. Let's be real about this. Add all your allocation money into your cap. That's your cap. You're talking about a minimum spend for teams in the $8 to $10 million range. And on the max end, you're talking into the 20s. I hope the CBA brings some clarity in that. I hope it makes it easier for all of it. And I hope it gives teams a little more flexibility in situations, whether it's eventually a bird rule kind of situation or what. But going back to the top. So the Villasanti, Arzamendi stuff, how many times have we seen negotiations hit a snag, whether it was Julian Gressel's transfer, /trade/contract negotiation, LGP and Tijuana, everybody was flipping out about LGP being in Tijuana, waiting on a deal to get done.
Even Barco.
Barco Watch was all over the place. Yeah. Pitti Watch was all over the place. Almiron to Newcastle was all over the place. That's what happens. And this is my gut feeling about the Paraguayan situation. These agents know what they're doing. They pay attention. They know that a move was just made. They know that there's an opportunity now. They're going to ask for more money. They should. They're doing right by their client. But there are limitations. In MLS, the limitation is a hard limitation. I can't fit this player in my roster and be compliant. In other clubs, the limitation is how much the ownership wants to spend and can spend. That's different, because you can always go find money if you're in that situation. And some clubs continually go try to find money and get themselves in trouble. In MLS, you have a hard cap. You're stuck. So the agent is going to ask for more money, because now they know Atlanta United's sitting on more in terms of allocation money. Proper negotiation. Does it mean a deal gets done? Don't know. Might not get done. Don't know. But Bocanegra made it clear yesterday. They're coming from the position of leverage. These are the options they have. They don't have to do the deal.
Right.
They'd like to. I think Villasanti would be a great fit. Not at a crazy amount of money. They need to make it work because they have options.
Bocanegra also said, at least at one different point, I think at a couple, that, you know, this is the frustration of working within the current salary cap structure, to Christopher's point. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, the new CBA addresses some of these things, but that assumption cannot be made right now.
Spending will go up. I think we know that.
But we don't know by how much. And that's the limitation.
Yeah.
You know, if it goes up 300%, you're having different conversations with Julian Gressel than, unfortunately, the conversations they have to have.
And this is where it gets hard, because we know Heinemann's on more money. It's been reported by some, not the club, not locally, that Heinemann's on a TAM or GAM kind of situation. Robinson the same. And we don't know. Won't know until those numbers are posted by the Players Association. So you take that, you look at last year's roster, you try to see where money could be, you add in this new allocation money, you're seriously the GIF of things all over the screen, and you have no idea what's happening. Like, that's what is going on with Atlanta salary.
And it's not good for the fans.
No, it's very hard.
And it puts the club in a difficult position. They could explain or even refute some of the things that are being said right now, but in doing that, they've basically tipped their roster sheet and their balance sheet to everyone else in the league.
And everyone else in the world.
Right, you can't do
that's
that.
That's the key. I think, what's going on right now.
Yeah, it's got to be really frustrating. Mm-hmm. For the club to see all these things kind of being thrown out there, and they're powerless to rebut or refute any of it, because they can't tip their hand.
You don't want to tell agents and players that I have unlimited money.
Right.
Come get it.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That's not how you negotiate.
Yeah. Oh, we got a wealthy owner. Money to burn over here in this office. Yeah. That's not how it works.
Because that's when players go to a Manchester City, a Manchester United, a PSG, and say, I want all of that money.
Right.
I mean, you can't do it. That's not how it works.
Let's see a funny comment from Chris Kilroy on Facebook. Thanks, guys. Got a great sponsor idea, Blue Cross Blue Shield, emotional/grief/trauma counseling.
I get it. Look, it's tough. It's really, really tough because Julian was a popular player. Leandro was a popular player. Miguel Almiron was probably the most popular player in the young history of this club. Unfortunately, MLS is a selling league, and Atlanta United is a selling club. And these are the things that I think we're just going to have to get used to. It does not mean that Atlanta United is going to be any less competitive, any less of a threat to win trophies. In fact, I think quite the opposite. Again, Julian Gress will be an example. You basically just created $1.1 million out of thin air because you drafted him and you helped him develop and then... It's hard to say it's a sale. It's really a trade, I guess, in MLS semantics. But
yeah,
it's essentially a sale
yep.
that could net you $1.1 million and you started with nothing. And those types of transactions are going to help this club get better. That's a good thing.
Yep.
Also, another thing I just thought of is that Atlanta United, they got so much value in these deals when they the first start of the club in 2017. The Gressel deal, I mean, you saw the value there. But now the renegotiating, now the new deals, I think that's where kind of it's coming up right now is kind of fitting this puzzle piece right now.
Yeah. Let's go to four important deals Atlanta United's made that I think bolster their reputation in this area. Gressel, player's happy. He got the contract that he wanted. He's getting paid. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires, Bocanegra talked about it yesterday. There had been offers in the past, last summer. Agent said, if there is an offer where he can make more money, we'd be interested. I would assume this is that offer. Player's going to be happy. He can make more money. Miguel Almiron, we know he wanted to go to Europe. More money, too. Carlos Carmona wanted to go home, wanted to go back to Colo-Colo. They made those deals happen. They got maximum value for them, but they also did right by the players involved. They did right by Julian Gressel here. Gressel did not want to wait, and I don't blame him, to see, all right, is the cap going to go up to where they can pay me what I'm asking for? How long am I going to have to wait? Am I going to go into the season not knowing? All those things that come up when you're in the final year of a contract and you're 26 and you're at that point where it is your big deal. Mm-hmm. So they did right by Julian Gressel too. When he got to the point that he wanted to guarantee security and he asked for the trade, you do it, you get maximum value, but you make sure the player's in a good position to get paid. And they did.
And it reinforces Atlanta United's recruiting pitch.
Yeah.
When they go to any player in the world and say, we can help you get to where you want to go, here are the examples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've listed four very, very notable examples where, I think you could even say Deion Pereira to an extent would fit into that as well. You know, someone where, Deion wanted to go home. Atlanta United let that happen.
Yep.
They did right by the player. This is very important. Mm-hmm. You know, Atlanta United could have sent a very negative statement to potential newcomers all over the world if they would have held Julian Gressel to this deal, made him a bona fide offer in the offseason, and basically ground this to the point where Julian Gressel was not playing next year, which could have happened.
Because he wouldn't have had the options outside the league that Luciano Acosta did.
Correct.
I don't think. He wouldn't have been paid.
That's what Carlos suggested yesterday. Yeah.
He wouldn't have been paid the same way.
Right.
He wouldn't have made that money in Mexico or going back to Europe. He would not have made the money that he's going to make in D.C. I do not think that would have happened. But D.C. is a prime example of two things that can go wrong when you do that. Acosta, we've talked about. Bill Hamid. You let his contract run out. You couldn't get a deal done. He goes to Denmark to sign a new deal. He's not happy because he's at a club where he's not getting playing time. You end up having to pay to loan him back to you and then buy him out of the contract.
When you had him in the first place.
You could have re-signed him if you were going to bring him back. He wasted a year, essentially, by going over and not playing. Yeah. So nobody won in that.
Let's see, on Twitter, Zach James Cole says, why are we purging fan favorite players / starters this late in the offseason right before CONCACAF Champions League?
You don't get to pick your timing. You don't get to pick your timing on when a player requests a trade. You don't get to pick your timing on when a club from Mexico comes in with an offer that the player has made it clear he wants to be paid more. You don't get to pick your timing. In a perfect world, you have everybody day one of getting ready for a CONCACAF Champions League. Same with every season in Europe. How often does it actually happen? Show me a case that a team didn't make any major changes in a preseason. It's just part of the gig. The purging fan favorites thing, I think, is a completely incorrect way to frame it. And I think it's a loaded way to frame it. Nobody was purged. The player asked for the trade. Julian Gressel wanted to be paid. He did not want to wait until the CBA was resolved to see if he could be paid here. He had a number. He asked for a trade. He got the trade he asked for. Leandro Gonzalez Pires, his agent, again, this is from what Carlos Bocanegra said yesterday, said that if there was an opportunity for his client to make more money, they would be interested. This one obviously fit that bill because the deal got done. The player wanted to do this. They did. They were not purged because you want to get rid of fan favorites. I don't even know where the reasoning would be. It's a loaded way of looking at it, and I've seen that a lot, and I'm not picking on it at all. It's just that's not what happened.
It's a product of the emotion right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, but the wording is very, very important.
No, I agree.
Because it creates a perception of people who might not know the detail, and it's something that has to be nailed down the right way.
Yep.
Let's see, on Twitter, Carlos asked, so where is Antoine Walks? Is it a permit paperwork, maybe?
No idea. I mean, you have a visa process, so, and I guess maybe it's more complicated. I have no way of knowing that. But he's also a player who has been playing. I believe his last game for Portsmouth was January 4th. So he's not coming in out of season. He would be coming in season. Honestly, you'd be asking him to do an 18-month season, essentially, or slightly less when the season ends. Be about a 14, 15-month season with no break. So I don't know if it's immigration issues, getting his stuff together to come make the move, or if it's, hey, take 2 weeks. Take a little bit of a break. Get a little bit of a break from your time at Portsmouth. Come in just a little bit later. We don't know.
I see Andrew Thomas on Facebook says, do you foresee any European interest in Pitti Martinez given his advanced age? I think he will have a much better sophomore MLS season.
I think he'll have a much better sophomore season too. And yeah, is it going to be the type of money and the types of clubs we're talking about with an Ezequiel Barco? No, it's a different situation. But are there clubs in Europe that would bring Pitti Martinez in with a need? Absolutely. A club like a Sevilla, for example, who has just sold Chicharito to the LA Galaxy, a club like that, if they have a need for that kind of player, completely. And the other thing to keep in mind is if Marcelo Gallardo goes to Europe, which I think will happen in the next year or two, he's a player who knows, or a manager who knows Pitti very, very well. Where he goes, he might be interested if there's a need in bringing in a player like that. So keep that in mind. But yeah, I think there is. I just think it's, you're not going to flip him in terms of the profit margin in the same way, but is there going to be interest? Yeah, he's a great player.
Let's see. Shiva on Twitter says, she's basically almost a set statement. Says, I'm nervous about CONCACAF Champions League strictly because of building team chemistry, but I'm confident we'll have a good season as the players get used to each other.
Yeah, the chemistry is the biggest thing. The ability, you go through CVs here and you like the names, you like the backgrounds, you like the characteristics. I'm good with the roster as it stands now. Mays is a new face. He's going to have a big role. He's new. How does it fit? Brooks Lennon, new player. How does it fit? How do you replace the presence of a Julian Gressel, a Leandro Gonzalez Pires? Those are all things that you can't 100% gauge. You hope to, and you do as much work as you can to learn about a player and their personality. You can never understand what a new group dynamic is until you're in that new dynamic.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest question here. It could be worse. It could be better. You don't know. You don't know how people get along.
The good news is you're playing a pretty decent amount of preseason fixtures. Mm-hmm. I think in the past... We, in fact, I remember going into the 2018 season, we were asking that afternoon in Houston after that 4-0 blowout to begin the season. Did Atlanta United play enough preseason fixtures? Mm-hmm. And I think they've gone out and they've addressed that. They're going to play a bunch of preseason fixtures this year. Four that have been announced. Oops. Four that have been announced. Three down in Florida and then in Birmingham. And then they're going to go to Mexico and really get into a CONCACAF mindset training there. So I worry less about these societies developing on the pitch, the chemistry, all those things that we talk about, compared to maybe this time 2 years ago, even though Tata Martino was in his second year and there was a lot of continuity from year one to year two, I just feel like they didn't play enough preseason fixtures. It was Nashville, the three Carolina Challenge Cup matches, and that was pretty much
it,
right?
Yeah.
Here you're playing Birmingham. You're playing three in Florida. I would suspect there's going to be another that we're going to find out about. You could also play some closed-door matches against maybe a USL Championship side or something like that.
That doesn't really fit schedule-wise. Let's go into the most important thing about that, though. You're in Bradenton for a period of time. It's one thing, and I think we saw it in 18. You had a big group coming back together, but you were at home the whole time. Mm-hmm. Guys go home.
Right.
You leave the training facility, you go home. You're in Bradenton. You're going back to a room with a couple guys. You're going to be playing FIFA on PlayStation, Xbox. Yeah. You're going to be sitting around playing cards. Well, you're going to be hanging out.
And to that point, I mean, how many photos have we seen of LaBonda? Everyone looks to be happy. I mean, no one looks like a hostage down there in Florida right now. And I will tell you, last year when they went to California, I don't think they really loved that experience because it was raining every single day.
The weather was miserable.
Well, they're not having that problem in Florida right now. So, you know, look, they're going to play a fixture on Friday. I think there's going to be a lot of overreaction to a closed-door fixture, no matter what the outcome. If it's 7-0 Atlanta United, people are going to overblow that. If it's 7-0, who are they playing, Red Bulls or Philly?
Red Bulls.
If it's 7-0 Red Bulls, people overreact to that. Atlanta United looked like the Terminator in last year's preseason, and then they've really struggled getting started in competitive matches. So, I would say let's just be patient with these preseason fixtures and what happens. But I am not as worried about that chemistry issue that Shiva's bringing up compared to maybe this time 2 years ago.
On the field, I'm not worried about it because I like the personalities of the players that have come in on the field, and that would be even including some of the rumored players. It's the off-the-field stuff that you just never know, you know, and that's the stuff that nobody knows.
That could be the same even if Gressel and LGP and Parkhurst and all these guys were still here.
Yeah.
Like you just
anytime you change a dynamic, you never know.
Yeah.
John Hammonds on Facebook, how many matches should we expect Jeff to start?
It's a good question. It's a hard one to read because last year I did not think he would end up being as important as he was. I thought he would. I honestly, going into the season, I thought it would be reversed with him and Parkhurst in terms of playing time. But Jeff looked like a beast at the end of the season. He was great at the end. And maybe some of that's because he didn't play as much early on, but 20 to 25, I think, is absolutely realistic for him. Now, the question in this group right now, I think there's probably more games for him and more minutes. If you bring in a player in this position, maybe there's a little bit less. He also might play a little bit more down here in a three center back setup. So 20 to 25 starts is probably about where I'm at right now.
Let's see. This is a good transition for some other MLS news for us. Andrew on Twitter, maybe it's me, but I think this Chicharito move is being overhyped.
No.
I totally disagree. No, it's front page news in Mexico. Which is incredibly important, by the way, as MLS continues to try to build that bridge.
I would love to know in what way it's being overhyped.
I get it's a major coup, but he's not the player he's being hailed as. I've seen this guy play a ton as a United fan, and I want to tell you for certain that no team has ever won with him as their top striker. I disagree because the first year Chicharito was with the United, they won the league.
Yes.
And then his 2012, when he was kind of a impact sub, they won the league. The last league they won,
right?
When they signed Van Persie, but I mean, his first year they won the league there, and he was top notch.
Mexico would argue about his impact too, and they've won some things. They have a few trophies that the United States would like to have, and he's had a big hand in that.
Absolutely.
his role, the impact of this is so much more than just on the field. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that if you're just following it from a Manchester United perspective, you might not understand that. This was worldwide news, first off. This was even more impactful in Mexico than any other move MLS has ever made. And MLS has had Mexican legends like Jorge Campos, Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Rafa Márquez, Carlos Hermosillo, Luis Hernandez. Tons of great Mexican players have come here. Chicharito is another level. Chicharito is an icon. He's not just a nice player. He's not just a good player for El Tri. He came up through Chivas. He is the golden boy in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And another facet to this is he's not just going anywhere in the league. He's going to Los Angeles, where, oh yeah, they have another top Mexican player in Carlos Vela. And that game is going to be the most talked about MLS game in Mexico and in the CONCACAF region ever. 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 There is not another player that's got the off-the-field cachet for this league since David Beckham. And Beckham opened the door, so it's a little different.
Right.
Beckham had the appeal worldwide. Beckham got on Good Morning America. Chicharito will be on every Spanish language show like that with LA Galaxy stuff on. It's a whole different thing. And if you're not paying attention to that side of the market, 21 of the 25 most watched games, soccer games in the United States on TV last year were in Spanish. And we're on 2DN. Or I think Fox Deportes might have got one with the final, the first leg of the final. 21 to 25. And I want to say one might have been MLS. I think it was the El Tráfico playoff game. That's it. This opens up a market that you've never truly opened up in the right way. And now you have. And you got hype, you got buzz, and you got two Clásicos for Los Angeles. El Tráfico was nice. Whole nother level right now. If I'm the LA Galaxy, I'm booking it at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I was about to say, I should book it there.
I'm booking it at the Rose Bowl, one, to celebrate my 25th anniversary, because that's where they originally played. I think it's a great story. You bring back Jorge Campos, you bring back, you know, Galaxy legends, but you might sell it out.
I'm looking for the Atlanta United when they play Galaxy. Yeah, that's
out there, it's going to be a blast.
That's going to be a really cool hype match.
Let's talk about another effect Chicharito is going to have. Game one, regular season, Houston. National TV. 2DN, they picked that one up. That was really smart to pick that one up early on, because that stadium will be full. And that stadium hasn't been full very often. And if I'm the Houston Dynamo, I'm giving them ticket offers to come back. I'm giving everybody a Dynamo shirt. I want them to come, be happy for Chicharito, wear your El Tri shirt, all that. It's great. But come back later and watch the Dynamo. That's what they have to do. Use this as a positive. And I hope the rest of the league does. It's a huge opportunity. This is a unique move. There's not a true comparison for it.
Also, 2 weeks later, I think they play in Miami. So it's a big one.
Yeah, that'll be a big one.
Miami's home opener?
Yep.
Yeah. Top-notch to Mena here, showing some good Manchester United highlights of Chicharito.
Nicely done.
Yeah, good job.
If you have not seen the MLSsoccer.com video that Kalen Carr did when he went over to Spain to interview Chicharito, first, massive props to Kalen for doing an interview in half Spanish, half English. Mm-hmm. And I think he was a little nervous about the Spanish part, and he worked pretty hard on it because he said at the end that he had been working on it. But it was good. And it was a very cool interview because question in English, question in Spanish. You had the subtitles for both. Back and forth in the conversation. And full credit to Chicharito, going back and forth, comfortable both, all's good. I love that type of content because for MLS to be successful and find another level in this country, Spanish has to be included in the way it brands itself.
Let's see, Andrew Thomas on Facebook. How many goals and assists do you think Miggy will have this season now that the floodgates have opened?
What's he on now, four?
I think so.
All competitions.
In all competitions, four? I've never looked at him as a major goal scorer. If he gets to 10, that's great, but I think it's probably more like a 6 to 8, usually, kind of thing for him. Assists, he can get around 10, but his impact's so much more than that. So I think it's something that I don't know if Newcastle fans truly understood it. Like, his box-to-box work, I'd play him as an 8 all day in England. In the right team, I'd play him as an 8, and I think he'd be a great fit.
Inside forward.
Yes. go back to the 2-3-5. So yeah, instead of this, flip it. It's a 2-3-5. Let's play him as one of the inside forwards.
When England
of the
was
five.
Playing Prussia.
Yes. Yes.
Let's see, CK Lopez. What strings are we pulling to have you guys call the NSH game? Is that the national game?
NSH.
What? NSH would be Nashville. Hell, I mean, we are calling.
We're calling
Nashville. Nashville. Game.
We're doing it. I mean, we are going to do every MLS
we're there.
Game. Yeah.
I just want to make sure I didn't. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't missing something.
Yeah. No. You know, no strings need to be pulled. We're doing it.
CK, please clarify. Because yeah. I am confused.
Yeah. NSH National Soda Hogs, or I don't know.
I got nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're doing it. Don't worry. But I'm assuming CK. Might be referring to something else, and I know CK watches the full hour of the show, so
please clarify,
back,
sir.
Come back if you can.
We've pretty much caught up to everything. Really.
Okay, good, yeah. Good. Well, no, that's good. I think, look, there's a lot of misinformation out there right now, and that's helped to kind of fan the flames of discontent.
Let me clarify one piece of misinformation, because this thing has been so confusing. I shouldn't have even mentioned it in the Instant Insight. Because it's not the biggest part of it. The whole thing about TAM and re-signing players. MLS's public rules and regulations, which is not complete, says the way it's written, you can't use TAM to re-sign players who are not max salary players or what have you. It implies that you can't use it to re-sign players. And that's something that the Players Association has talked about. That's one reason they don't like TAM. TAM is generally used to bring in new players. Now, we have seen some signings using TAM, and Paul Tenorio clarified today on Twitter, all TAM signings have to be approved by the league. And I think that's where some of the confusion comes in, too, is so you have these rules and regulations that are not 100% clear publicly. There's more detail for the clubs, obviously, but regardless of all of it, MLS approves a TAM signing or not. And we've seen some, we've heard about some that have not been approved. So Julian Gressel will be a TAM signing for DC. So it was approved. He could have been here. He also could have been a GAM signing. You could have done it any which way. It's not the reason directly why a deal didn't happen here. That's why I shouldn't have even mentioned it, because it just adds to confusion. The CBA and whatever rules that could change later were more of the issue. Cap space and ways you can use allocation money. That's more of the issue why Atlanta couldn't do it now. Now, I've seen a lot of national writers say, well, they did this with Hyndman, they did this with Robinson. Some of it is different positions, so you're talking about different budgets, and some of it's leverage. And you have to understand that. If you don't go get Emerson Hyndman last year, for example, that's after Darlington Nagbe had turned down a long-term deal. You got to do what's right for the team at that point. He came in and he was good last season. You'd expect him to be even better this season. You have to go get Brooks Lennon when he's available, because it's leverage. Because let's say you didn't do that. That changes this a little bit. That makes it to where, all right, now you got to go find that player and still the number eight you're talking about. You've got to always be a step ahead. So you were able to re-sign Robinson because you needed to, because he's one of the best young center backs in the country. You were able to go get Hyndman because you knew Nagbe was on the way out. And you were able to go get Lennon, and you did it because you knew there was a possibility of something like this, because you had already made two offers that had been turned down. That's part of the business. So all of that makes the direct information of, well, they lied when they were talking about the CBA. No, that's not true. You don't know how much more money you could have had to work with. Maybe the contract that he's on in D.C. doesn't look as large as it is if you have more salary cap space. Maybe you change the way designated players, allocation money is structured, so you could have done different things to make it more palatable. But looking at other moves and comparing them to that one, you can't do that directly. You have to look at the big picture when you talk about these things. But I shouldn't have mentioned the TAM thing. It's too complicated to begin with, let alone it's all kinds of misinformation and confusion. It's not the major issue. It became a talking point that it didn't need to be.
Speaking of the CBA, about this time next week it will expire, January 31st. So yeah. I think next Friday is when it expires. Haven't really heard a whole lot of additional news in the last week since we last spoke with you about where things stand with the CBA right now. But I think we'll get a pretty good clue next Friday how close or how far apart these two sides are, because there have been some rumblings that if things are really far apart, that the CONCACAF participating clubs would not actually participate in the tournament. I don't get any sense that that is going to happen, which it leads me to believe that things are in at least a decent spot right now with the CBA negotiations.
And again, leverage has been the key word in a lot of ways. It's leverage. Yep. You know, the players and the Players Association has to say that, yeah, we could hold out of CONCACAF games. That's your leverage. You know, going on strike is leverage to get the deal you want to get. It sounds like both sides have been talking. There have been things going back and forth. It's gotten a little quiet the last day or two, but teams are back in camp. There's been some other things going on. So you would expect that it gets done. I think that's where the vibe has been.
Speaking of CONCACAF, this came out, I think, last Thursday or Friday, the move of the Motagua fixture to the national stadium, basically.
The Estadio Olimpico.
To me, I think that's probably a slight advantage to Atlanta United. It gets it into more of a neutral site than it would be if you're at Motagua's ground. But it sounds like Motagua's ground is, infrastructure-wise, just not right there right now to be able to handle
it. I think they're going through some renovations. Motagua's ground, they share it with Olimpia. Both games are moved over to the Estadio Olimpico. That is Marathon's home ground, another top Honduran club. It's not that far, so I don't think it really affects that.
I heard somewhere it was 4 hours.
Oh, wow, it's further than I thought. Okay, I didn't think it was that far.
I don't know Honduran geography, so I could be dead wrong on that.
No, you might. I don't know. I know that this is the stadium that the U.S. played in 2013 in February, qualifying for the 2014 World Cup. And if I remember correctly, it's not the widest field. I think it's just about 70, which is still fine, but a little more narrow. And the grass was very thick at that time. And this was an early February game. It was very hot, very humid. Grass was very thick, slow. You could see some of that, so be ready for that. It is a night game, not an afternoon game like they played that one. They played that one in the middle of the day, and it was rough.
Did CK ever get
back? Yeah, CK was like, it was Nashville.
Oh, okay.
So just making sure, since we'll be stashing the 300s in Nashville, I might need to keep an earbud in underneath my ear muscle.
Well, go right
freezing
ahead.
And screaming.
Go right ahead. Yeah, do that. All I can say about that is fill it up.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to put the Atlanta supporters up in the 300s, then fill it. Yeah, seriously.
Well, they don't have the whole 300s open.
For now. I'm sure if there was enough demand, they'd probably open up some more sections.
That's tough. Yeah. I don't know if they want a 300 level of red and black. And there's a lot of red and black in other sections, too.
There will be. There will be. But yes, we'll be calling them Asha 92.9 the game. And CK, I guess what I would tell you is bring your phone, stream it on radio.com. We'll be a couple seconds behind if you're listening on your phone, but it's barely.
We got some special things planned around that event, too, so just
stay
tuned for that.
Yeah, working on it.
Andrew Thomas says Sweet Tea Showdown, he wants it to be called.
Right now, that's a working title.
Yeah, I don't think there's really been an official title to this derby yet. Sweet Tea is fine. I don't know where else he would really go. I mean, country versus hip hop. Not that, but if there was a playoff,
this is the Cowboy Troy like rivalry here now.
The Cowboy Troy rivalry is actually not bad.
I think he's from Texas though.
White Castle versus Crystal.
Crystal just filed for bankruptcy. It's a sad day.
That does not mean they're closing. It just means
it's still a sad day.
It is. Trust me.
Kelly Francis said a group of 20 plus with her are in the 100 section.
I think there's a few groups like that too.
Yeah, you can do that. And there might, you never know. Do not rule out the possibility that some Nashville supporters are going to put their tickets on the street. They might have a profit making opportunity, especially if the weather forecast looks bad leading up to the game. Yeah.
They have experience in this world if you're a Vanderbilt fan selling to Georgia fans, so you know.
Well,
it's good.
This one will be different, I have a feeling.
It looks a little like that.
Yeah. anyhow, okay, so just to kind of bring you up to speed again, February 8th, we're going to be in Birmingham, and Jason and I are going to call that game on the radio, 4:30 at BBVA
Field.
Thank you, where Birmingham Legion plays. That is, to this point, the only open to the public preseason fixture that Atlanta United will have to this point. So we'll have coverage on the radio on Saturday, February 8th. We'll have the first Motagua fixture on the 18th of February.
Tuesday night.
That'll be at 9:30 on 92.9 The Game, and of course the return leg the weekend after at Kennesaw, all leading up to that Nashville match on the 29th. So I know some people have been asking, is there going to be any coverage of the preseason fixtures? We can tell you, definitely for sure, radio coverage of that match at Birmingham on the 8th. And stay tuned. There might be additional announcements from the club later on as we get further along in the preseason. But look, this looks okay right now. I think, you know, especially when you have the starters on the board, you feel like Atlanta United can do some damage with that lineup. But I'll stress again, I don't think they're done. And I think even Carlos Bocanegra, in a roundabout sort of way, hinted that while they're not going to make a deal just for the sake of making a deal, that there is still room for them to do some things to make this club better. I anticipate they're going to between now and then Motagua fixture on the 16th.
They've got the allocation money to work with, and whatever has been spent on a raise for Robinson, for Hindman, for others, you've still got money to spend. You just brought in some for Gressel. You've got flexibility. You're going to try to get a deal. You're going to try to get the best deal. You're okay if you can't. You have the leverage either way, and that's where you want to be. You're not operating from a position like Seattle, where you have two center backs. Like, Seattle could use all of these guys. Yeah. And one of the center backs is Shane O'Neill, who was let go by Orlando last year. So, I mean, and they're the defending champions. Mm-hmm. You know, Toronto's got a huge question right now with Michael Bradley out for 4 months after ankle surgery and how that's been handled. Jozy Altidore didn't like it. Not many other people did either.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of questions everywhere. LAFC, even them, they have questions. New York City, new manager. It's this time of year. This is what we do.
Yep. We'll be back next Wednesday, 2 o'clock here on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page for another edition of Stoppage Time. For Mena, Jason, Jimmy, I'm Mike. Thanks for joining us.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.